When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
Welcome to SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local organizations like Madison Firefighters, Local 311, Madison Teachers Incorporated, and the Madison Area Teamsters, Local 695. Joining us now, State Representative Chris Taylor of Madison. First of all, I would be remiss if I did not pass along my condolences to you on the loss of your father.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's been, you know, something you really don't imagine happening when you're losing one of your parents. But I really appreciate it. People have been so kind and wonderful and all of that. So thank you.
Well, he obviously gave you a good foundation and interest in politics, huh?
You know, you would have really loved my dad. I mean, he was real blue-collar guy. He barely graduated from high school. Really hard worker, though, worked his whole life. He was a Republican until Ronald Reagan. And then it was the attacks on unions and really, you know, the social conservatism that my dad just could not tolerate. He was a real feminist. He was really committed to women's rights, you know, having two daughters. He was a veteran. He served in the Army. He was just a really such a interesting
that
man.
That is so funny. That is so funny you mentioned that, because my dad was a Republican, not all the time, but generally until he couldn't stand Ronald Reagan and he switched. Very
That's
funny.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. He really switched. And he honestly, until the very end of his life, he was rallying against the current politics. I mean, he's just very, very, a very strong Democrat. But in really kind of that category that we're kind of losing from the Democrat Party, the working, very working class white men, you know, that was my dad. And it was just really interesting watching his evolution, which of course impacted, you know, my sister and I very significantly. So,
well, I hope,
you know, but
I hope, as I try to get the details out to people, that Donald Trump is not coming through on, he talks a good game on trade, but Donald Trump is not coming through on his promises to protect American jobs. And we're seeing a huge hit in the Wisconsin paper industry, and the Trump administration is doing nothing. I mean, he's clearly listening to the likes of Gary Cohen and the other people from Wall Street mm-hmm. he's put into his thing. And now that Wisconsin has dedicated all this money to Foxconn, there are jobs with American companies that could be saved right now in the Fox River Valley, and Scott Walker's not doing anything either.
No, they're not doing a thing for our Wisconsin businesses, our local jobs, the main streets on our communities throughout the state. It's so disappointing. It's mind-boggling, honestly. Why wouldn't we be investing in Wisconsin businesses that create most of the jobs in our state? It's the small businesses that create most of the jobs.
And pay well
and support local economies. You know, that's the thing about Foxconn. It is a con. It's a total con. And, you know, I don't know if you had time to look at some of the contract details that came out, but, you know, we were promised, oh, there'll be 13,000 jobs created. Well, when you look at the contract that was actually being executed, the job cap is at a little over 8,000 jobs that they have to create to get the maximum tax cuts.
Mm.
There's nowhere in that contract anything about 13,000 jobs. In fact, in even looking at Foxconn's own consultants, they specifically declined to verify the job numbers in their report. That was the only report we had about the economic impact of Foxconn. Their own consultants made very, very clear they were not validating the job projection numbers.
Pretty remarkable.
So it's smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
Smoke and mirrors.
Well, it's my understanding when a lot of volunteers went down to help Corey Mason. And make no mistake, I'm very glad Corey Mason was elected mayor of Racine. But there were plenty of people, even in Racine, that didn't like this Foxconn deal.
No, they didn't. And they know they don't want their environment polluted. They don't want workers to be exploited. You know, in the Foxconn contract, if you are in the assumptions that were being made about this scheme, if you read the consultant's report, they estimate that every worker, they assume every worker is going to have to work 20% overtime. That's what Foxconn does. They work these workers to death. This is what they've done all over the world. They pollute and they exploit their workers. And they already were saying, well, workers are going to have to work 20% overtime. That was their assumption that that was going to happen. And so, unfortunately, Scott Walker and these Republicans, they want to create China right here in the state of Wisconsin with no protections for workers and no protections for our environment, which is critical to our economy. So it's just such a bad deal, and everyone's paying for it. Every single household in the state of Wisconsin is going to pay a Taiwanese billionaire, when our own businesses could have used that support to actually create sustainable jobs.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I guess Scott Walker felt like, because this was an election year, he could get unanimous support, or virtually unanimous support, from Republicans. When he had to cut a deal in the Bucks arena and a lot of Republicans bailed, he got a better deal because unions were involved, local people were involved, and the Bucks owners are certainly more responsible than Foxconn.
Right.
But this is nothing. And then I know some people didn't vote for the Bucks deal either, but the truth is this Foxconn deal is nothing like the Bucks deal.
No, it's not even close. It's not even close. And I think, and I was not supportive of the Bucks deal, for a number of reasons, but it was a completely different deal. And you got Democratic support, much broader Democratic support than with this Foxconn scheme. And it's really a scam, actually. It was done very differently. You had a commitment of the Bucks to work with labor, not against labor, not exploiting labor. You know, there was a commitment to being fair. There's a commitment to the community. They've been in the community. We don't have any of that in this scam. And, you know, we don't even have adequate protections for taxpayers. This money that we're paying out, these billions of dollars, there's not a real strong clawback provision that protects taxpayers. I said to my Republican colleagues, why are they so flippant with the people's money? They're so flippant. They think like money grows on trees. They're so willing to give it to the first corporation that comes along that makes promises that can't even be validated by their own consultants.
Let's talk about some of the other things that you're working on, but I want to kind of predicate this on story after story. Obviously, the stories about former Supreme Court Justice Roy Moore in Alabama. I mean, mm-hmm. I literally almost vomited when I read that story. And the stories about some of the Hollywood people, including Kevin Spacey, mm-hmm. to a lesser extent, Louis C.K., and then obviously Harvey Weinstein. How do you, as an American woman, how do you feel about these stories?
Well, honestly, it's horrible. I mean, you know, you feel terrible about it. I mean, you also are not that surprised.
See,
in a sad way.
This, I mean, I'm kind of faulting myself for maybe not being as sensitive to this as I should as an American male, because I guess I am shocked. I mean, I have seen plenty of inappropriate language in front of women in the workplace, and God knows I'm not a paragon of virtue, okay? I've made remarks that I shouldn't, but this predatory behavior, I am shocked at this predatory. Why are you not shocked at the predatory behavior?
Because I've experienced it in my own life, and most women have, frankly. I mean, it's kind of shocking, and I know why people don't speak out. You don't feel you're going to be believed. You feel like you're going to be scrutinized and criticized, and so you let it go. You know, we had someone right in this building that many of us had negative experiences with. Thankfully, he's gone. And, you know, why don't we speak out? Why don't we make it an issue? Because you don't feel, and particularly in such a partisan environment like we have in politics.
You know, if you look back,
and
I don't
know. To these women.
I don't think
Roy Moore.
I don't think the story's online, but, you know, there was at one time in the Wisconsin legislature, my sister was a page in the state assembly, and she was a whistleblower talking about the behavior of the male legislators and some pretty prominent names. And then we had Walter Ward, who was a legislator who actually sexually assaulted a woman in the elevator and was convicted of a felony. So this, I know that that's gone on for years, but this is just like one case after another.
It is. It's one after another. And I don't know what, I think sometimes when people get into power, they exploit the power, and we have mostly men in power still. The Roy Moore situation, you know, look at what is happening now to one of the key accusers there, who's 14 at the time. She's a Republican.
Right.
And she is being accused of all kinds of things. And that's why women don't speak out, because they know what's going to happen to them. And it's too bad. I think now women are speaking out, finally. But I can tell you, even women like myself are very outspoken about these issues. There have been times I haven't spoken out when I should have. And sometimes you just don't want to deal with it, honestly. So I think it is it's a lesson for everybody that we do, you know, that there is now support for speaking out, that women are supporting each other. And we do need men. We need men to be engaged in this conversation. You know, as a mother of two young sons, you know, I think about these issues a lot. And how do I raise my sons to be men who not just oppose and speak out against this, but who stop it in its tracks when you witness it? And I think that's really what we need men to help us do, is to help us stop it when they see this behavior, to call out their friends when they see this stuff happening. So we do need everybody to counter this. But the thing I'm so grateful for is there is a movement now of support in women. But you know what, Sly, I got to tell you something. I heard, and this is so shocking. Yes, last week on the assembly floor, we were debating a bill to deny women access to abortion coverage for medically necessary reasons.
Oh, yeah. I'm
under the state health insurance plan. Not only did I hear one of my colleagues insinuate, because I had an amendment saying, if you're raped or victim of incest, you should be able to get your abortion covered. You should not have to report it to the police, because most victims don't report to the police. And I actually had a colleague stand up and say, well, basically women lie about rape.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, Norma McCorvey, who was the original Roe v. Wade, she lied, according to this person, she lied about being raped. Therefore, women lie about being raped. And so that's why we have to require them to report their rape.
You know,
the police before they get their abortion covered.
A legislator in Illinois lost his leadership position. He was a Democrat for sexually harassing a lobbyist. And Illinois is now going to be putting in a position for someone who will investigate these things and codify some rules and sexual harassment policies for legislators and people that work in the building in Springfield. Do you know if anything like that exists in Madison?
No. Mm-mm. That's a good thing we should look at, though. Absolutely. Because this does happen. It happens, as you're saying, it happens. It doesn't matter. It's Republican and it's Democrat. And we do need more protection. So that's a good thing to look at. But I got to tell you, the thing that was a little shocking to me is that was a pretty shocking thing, I think, to say on the floor. And we heard more shocking things about women on the floor.
All right, why don't we pick it up? We'll take a quick break here, and then we'll talk more in depth about that. State Representative Chris Taylor with us at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Hey, this is Sly for S&R Remodeling. Look, this time of year is a great time to call S&R Remodeling at 222-8044. Scott likes to keep his carpenters busy all winter long. You can probably get a better deal this time of year, and that would be great. Yep, they can remodel kitchens hassle-free. They'll get it done quickly and keep your house clean, and they are very respectful. Look, they have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, and there's a reason for that. There's a lot of remodelers. They come and go. Scott's been around for 30 years. Here's their phone number at S&R Remodeling, 222-8044. Tell them Sly sent you.
We're back at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us again, State Representative Chris Taylor. She is a Democrat from Madison. So let's pick up where we left off. Some of the shocking things legislators have said on some of these reproductive rights issues. They've been going after abortion once again.
Right, once again. So the thing about that comment about, well, you know, the total insinuation that women who are raped lie, the thing that was so discouraging is it was not picked up by the press at all. And then there was another comment by Representative Allen from the Waukesha area about how, well, we need women to procreate to support our labor market, and that's why we should not let them have access to reproductive health care. I mean, seriously.
Referring to you as chattel.
Right. We are incubators. I mean, this is the handmaid's tale. This is, you know, you can't even believe this stuff. And it's very interesting. You're almost flabbergasted by it. And I did come back to it in the remarks that I had to say on the floor about that bill. But that's pretty outrageous. That's pretty outrageous. It's basically, you know, it's basically saying that women should be denied these fundamental rights to meet the Republicans' economic development plan. You know, how about welcoming immigrants? Maybe they could provide some of the labor we need. Or why would you want to exclude women from the workforce because they're too busy procreating? We need women in the workforce. That's going to help us with having a labor supply. Can you imagine if women weren't in the workforce? First of all, families couldn't economically survive. But that was an outrageous statement, and it got no local coverage in the press.
Yeah.
The national press covered it.
The Capital Times did cover that. The Capital Times
did write. Did they? Okay.
Yeah, they wrote a story about that.
Good for you.
So I have to ask, you know, there was a Republican Party in Wisconsin at one time, and most of this happened before you got here, but there was Peggy Rosenzweig, and there was Representative Goodrich, and there was Representative and then State Senator Lorman. I didn't agree with their economic policies, you know, but they were reasonable people who stood up for women's rights.
Yeah, well, it's...
there was a time people... where the state senator who's on Joint Finance Committee, Alberta Darling, at one time was a voice for women. For some reason, she decided to take a different tact in the last 10 years.
Yep. No, those moderate, even Mary Panzer, honestly, when she was in the Senate, was a very moderate voice. I mean, I remember when
she was defeated by another progressive, Chris.
Glenn Grossman. Oh, my gosh. That was scary. You know, I met with these women when I was at Planned Parenthood.
Sure.
I met with Alberta Darling on occasion. I met with Mary Panzer. So they were still really willing and understood how bad these policies were, but those moderates have been so chased out of the Republican Party. Most of them are gone. I mean, the only person that remains is Alberta Darling. And I will say, I do think Alberta is helpful in a quiet way on occasion. But she certainly is not that vocal advocate. We don't have those people anymore. And, you know, when I look across the aisle at my Republican colleagues, first of all, the vast majority are men. But there are some women who I really do like. And there are some men I really do like who are Republicans. I know they disagree with things that are said. I absolutely know it. And I so wish that they would stand up. You know, but I also am very aware of what the penalties that they go through. Not that that justifies it, because I know they know this stuff is wrong.
Tell us.
But unfortunately, that's where we are in the people who are chosen to run and the people who win these Republican primaries.
Tell me about the Respect Women Act.
Well, the Respect Women Act is my vision for what really we should be doing, and Senator Urbanbach's vision for what we should be doing on reproductive health care. It's a package of bills that basically, the first, most important bill, repeals all these horrible reproductive health restrictions that are not grounded in medical science and that aren't related to protecting women's health, that are this political agenda that we see. So the first bill would say, look, those, unless you're going to pass a law that enhances women's health or protects women's safety, you can't be restricting access to reproductive health care. So I love the bill. I love it so much. This is our vision for what we, the state that we want. The next bill is even more basic in a lot of ways, and it establishes an actual right of healthcare providers to provide medically accurate information to patients. So it's that right of the provider to reject information that is being politically motivated, that conveys the wrong information to patients, and actually give the medically correct information to patients. So it establishes that right and the right of the patient to get that information. Who could be against that? That should be across the board that we want healthcare providers to give that. And then the third bill that's a bit of a smaller bill is really about enhancing provider and patient safety and working with law enforcement to develop some tactics to protect providers. Providers are still very much targeted, reproductive health providers, for violence and harassment. So to partner more with law enforcement to come up with best practices in protecting patients and providers. So it's just a great, I love the package. It's the Respect Women Act. You know, I love working with Senator Erpenbach. He is just such a great voice for people, you know, and the rights of people. And it's great to have a man who is so compassionate and so such a great advocate on these issues. So this is our vision for the state. We know it's not going to pass, but we're still going to talk about it, and we're still going to talk about why it's so important rights be protected.
If the Democrats were to get the legislature back, obviously a couple things have to fall into place, but obviously we saw some hopeful signs in Virginia and New Jersey and New York and Pennsylvania and Washington State the other day. Could you ever see putting a coalition together statewide where you could get enough votes to pass this? Because sometimes outstate, there are legislators that are Democrats that have mixed views on some of these issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. And, you know, look, I know that there's a lot of ambiguity with some people around the issue of abortion. I know it's a personal thing. And I think that's okay. I think, you know, what my position is these issues are not for politicians. These are not decisions you want politicians making. They're way too personal and way too private for André Jacques to be the one telling me what's going to happen in some of these situations. So absolutely, I think we would have a good shot of passing something like this.
I think Dave Hansen's a good example,
building.
Right?
Absolutely.
State Senator Dave Hansen,
absolutely.
He's personally pro-life, but said that, in fact, he draws a distinct line between what he passes, you know, as far as laws for women versus his own personal views.
Yes, and that's what we do as lawmakers. That's what we should be doing as lawmakers.
That's the concept.
So, that's a concept. You know, too bad it's not upheld most of the time by my Republican colleagues who are so... This agenda, just the agendas we've seen in the last three session days, it's just they're so out of touch with what
people
need in our
state. The fetal tissue bill, that hasn't passed yet, has it? They've been...
No.
And then the attacks on funding of Planned Parenthood, we're literally attacking women's health here, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just been devastating. You know, the Trump-Walker agenda is really to shut down Planned Parenthood and to shut down reproductive health facilities. Most of these centers that have closed because of Governor Walker don't even provide abortions, but they do provide life-saving cervical and breast cancer screens and access to birth control, you know, things that we want people to have access to. So the five clinics, the health centers that have closed because Scott Walker and these Republican legislators withdrew every single state dollar from Planned Parenthood, they had nothing to do with abortion except preventing the need for abortion by making sure women had access to health care. And these centers were in rural communities, and there is nobody there now providing these services.
Let me ask you a couple quick questions before we go. Gun legislation. You and I don't see perfectly eye to eye on where to draw the line on Second Amendment issues in all cases. But I have to tell you, as somebody who really believes in you know, the Second Amendment and actually enthusiastically support it, I understand the great responsibility that comes with that amendment not impinging on other people's right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Mm-hmm. This notion that we would have no age for someone to carry a gun hunting as a child. I'm sorry, but on my rock show that I do in the afternoon now, I asked hunters of Wisconsin, and this is a blue-collar audience, no one agreed with that. No one. I asked people when they shot their first deer, and it was generally 12, 13, 14. They thought it was crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah, I got contacts from hunters, you know, 40 years. I had a guy who had been teaching gun safety for 40 years write me and say, this is insane. These legislators have lost their minds, literally. This is what this guy said to me, who is a gun owner. He is most gun owners are responsible. Most gun owners are responsible. But my God, why on earth would you want to arm a four-year-old? I gave the example of my own son, who's 7. Nobody on earth would want him to get a hunting rifle, or any of his friends, for that matter. You know, they're just incapable. And it's not, you know, you could be standing right next to a child, and it's in the blink of an eye that gun goes off. So a child, unfortunately, has probably more chance of shooting themselves or somebody else than ever shooting a deer. It just was so irresponsible.
And what about the concealed carry and getting rid of the permits altogether? And just,
yeah, that's another bad idea. You know,
does that have a chance of passing?
It does. I hope to God it doesn't, but it does. Every crazy idea has a chance of passing in this building. You know, we had a lot of crazy ideas yesterday that passed. It does have a chance, but I'm hopeful that the communities will continue to say that's the wrong way to go.
And you introduced a bill to ban these bump stocks, correct?
Well, yes, I introduced a bill, and I really tried to get some of my Republican colleagues with me because I thought it was a chance to have a good, strong bipartisan piece of legislation on guns, which has never, ever happened since I've been here. And unfortunately, I couldn't even get one on it, even though I know they support it. So that was very disappointing. But we're still going to push that. We still have our universal background check. I don't know about you, Sly. I'll tell you, I have read about this recent shooting. I wish I didn't know what I know about it, because I'm so horrified by what happened in that church, just like I've been horrified at Las Vegas and horrified, you know, what happened at Sandy Hook. But honestly, it's the 90 people that die every single day from gun deaths that we also should be horrified by. So it's not just these mass shootings that are still, you know, more frequent than any other country. But it's the everyday people, and it's the people who commit suicide, you know, and that's really a lot of the gun deaths come from somebody who is desperate and commits suicide. I know a waiting period can make a difference there. So I'm not ever advocating take people's guns away, take their hunting rifles away. What I want to work on is how do we make it much harder for a dangerous person, either they're dangerous to themselves or somebody else, to get access. That's what we should be focusing on. And there are things we can all agree on.
And in both the case in Charleston, South Carolina, with Dylan Roof, who went into the church, and the case in Texas, in Sutherland Springs, we had huge holes with our background checks. They're not adequate.
I know.
Clearly not adequate. And that is unacceptable. No. I also would say, and I don't call for a ban on them. I've shot them. They are a very popular gun. When it comes to AR-15s or AK-47s, they aren't the same as the military weapons, but they're similar in style and looks, but they're semi-automatic, much like most pistols now. There should be a higher standard and a longer waiting period, and there should also be a limit on the number of people that can buy them, and there should be a limit on what the magazine holds.
Yes, I think that the magazine capacity is an area where we might also get some consensus. Look, I want to work with Republicans to do everything we can to make access harder for those people who are clearly a danger. And this guy, you know, this shooter in Sutherland Springs, if you listen to what people said about him, everybody said he was waiting. He was a time bomb waiting to go off.
Well, he fit the pattern.
So many red flags.
Hit the kid, hit the wife, hit the dog. Pretty good.
I mean, come on.
Pretty good pattern.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
So,
State Representative,
I'm interested in working collaboratively. That's what I want to do.
Representative Taylor, thanks for coming to SlySOffice.com.
Thank you.
All right, hang on just
thanks
a sec.
Thanks for having me.
This is Sly, SlySOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SlySOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.